I've started the recording, so for those people who cannot join, they can actually watch the recording afterwards in the Channel 9 section. Just a reminder for everybody, please keep yourself muted. We will definitely hit more than 50 attendees, so the audio is always a slightly difficult thing, but we're already actually hitting the 50. So keep yourself muted. Feel free to ask questions in the IM window. And in the end of the call, if we have time and if time permits, we can open up the audio for questions and discussions as well. But I think we are actually good to go, where we will probably get a lot of people joining a few minutes late, which is relatively typical. So, September 2015, the latest release notes and and there goes my English, or Finglish. So let's actually get started on the call, and let's actually concentrate on what do we have. So typical PNP call setup. I know that a lot of you have actually been in these calls before, and there always might be new people actually joining. So we start with the monthly highlights. So what was actually released as part of the September release, and then we go through the individual contributors and what was actually released, and try to cover all of the different samples and updates and all of that. We will have again a few slides that are around the following steps, what we're planning to do, and then demos, demos, demos. So this time we have two demos, one from Bob, and one from Matei. If Matei is on the call as well, I think he will be at least there. He is. I'll promote him presenter when he's actually fully joined. So let's get actually started on the material itself. So first of all, for them who are joining this call first time, if you're interested about SharePoint or Office 365 adding or app development, whatever you want to call that, the AKMS Office Dev PNP will land you on the Patterns and Practices welcome page in the dev.office.com. And from there, you can actually use the search tools, which I'm going to show you, or as a screenshot, show that one later today. There's also quite a lot of other URLs which might be highly useful. So AKMS Office Dev PNP Yammer is the Yammer group. It is the most active Yammer group in the Office 365 network, which is really, really cool. Because people are actually using that group to help between each other. Me and a lot of the other guys in the core team are helping around the questions, and obviously the community can help around the questions in the Yammer group as well. And obviously we do prefer using the Yammer, even though every now and then there might be small delays on getting answers on those questions. We're trying to get all of those questions answered, rather than sending direct emails, because the direct emails is actually usually the reason why we're not in Yammer, because we're tackling our inbox and that's not beneficial. AKMS Office Dev PNP MSDN will land you to the MSDN pages. So the Patterns and Practices guidance is official guidance from Microsoft and official guidance from the engineering as well. There's numerous tens and tens articles already in MSDN, and we are actually super proud of that one as well. AKMS Office Dev PNP videos. There's videos about the demos and materials, and obviously the community call recordings are available from the Channel 9 as well. And then AKMS Office Dev PNP training, and that will land you on, let's say, the Patterns and Practices style training material, which contains presentations, demos, and hands-on labs. And you're more than willing to use those for in-house trainings, or you can just as well use them for delivering trainings for anybody in the world. So all of this material is all for you. You can do whatever you want to do with it, and you can play around with it. You can deliver trainings or whatever needed based on your will. Just making sure that everybody is aware of this, because every now and then we get feedback that it's the GitHub is so really difficult and we can't find any samples, and there's a lot of questions around finding individual samples. If you really want to find a specific sample for your adding implementation or supporting your solution, we would recommend you to actually go to dev.office.com. If you go dev.office.com, resources, the PNP, that's the PNP landing page, or AKMS Office Dev PNP. Then you click samples/guidance, and you will actually see all of the samples listed in this search tool, where there will be or there is multiple different filters which you can use to find out the relevant sample for you for that specific case. For example, for site provisioning or branding or whatever, you can easily filter down those options. And then I know that there's a lot of guidance, there's a lot of samples out there, but this tool is absolutely helping to find the relevant information for you. And so in dev.office.com. So you don't actually have to use the GitHub UI to find the relevant sample. The second thing, what we wanted to be a kind of a remind, is the Channel 9 section for the patterns and practices. And please remember to mute yourself. There was some background noise. So please use the IM window for questions if there's anything. So the AKMS Office Dev BNP videos, you'll find demo videos for many of the samples. You'll find training videos around the guidance. Now I'm going to mute somebody who's not muted. And then there's community call recordings from the past month. So this will be highly beneficial for you if you're looking into some specific case. There's numerous persons who contributed on the video side as well around the different sections in the patterns and practices guidance. Statistics. This is always an interesting thing, at least for us in the BNP core team. So we're absolutely super, we're tracking all of these statistics relatively well. And I'm going to quickly show you one additional thing around that. The BNP main repository in the GitHub has been already forked 928 times, and that's by far the most forked repo under Office Dev, which we are super proud of. So we're hitting the 1,000. If you're looking into the numbers, we're going to hit 1,000 by the October release, which is pretty cool. There's already 907 merge/closed pull requests, 182 closed issues, and we do know that there's quite a lot of issues open there, which we need to start seriously tackling, where we would actually need the community help as well. We kind of stabled on the unique visitors, so it has been around 4,000 since, let's say, April. We peaked in June with the unique visitors in the repository, and then there was a slightly slower month after that. But that's typical during summertime. So the August numbers were 3,800, but now we're getting back on the normal monthly unique visitor numbers. The NuGet package, so the BNP core component has been downloaded already 8,000 and almost 9,000 times, which is a really great thing. That's a great tool for improving productivity of the developers. Yammer Group has 3,249 members. It might be actually more than that. It actually went down. So after I updated that number, it has gone down to two members from the group. Damn it. That's fine. And then we have a Facebook page, which is not super, super active, but it has already 249 likes. But these are, every single one is growing, which is a super, super thing for the team as well. So we're clearly seeing that interest, what the community is having around the guidance, what we're actually providing. And that's also visible. That's also visible within these statistics, which start from the November last year. And this is something what I wrote in Finglish, also the dev.office.com blog, around the, let's say, the yearly summary of the patterns and practices. We're seeing relatively nice growth, for example, for NuGet downloads, and also average of the unique visitors and Yammer Group. So Yammer Group is starting to slow down slowly, and the unique visitors have that summer slowness, let's say, during August, but it's now starting to grow again, which is a really great thing. The second thing, graphics on the slides is then related on GitHub forks and also the pull requests. And what's kind of an interesting thing is that they're pretty much on the same angle. So as many forks as we're getting, as many pull requests we're also getting in. There's not really direct relation between these two, and we do understand that, but it's kind of an interesting that the number is hitting pretty much on the same hundreds at the moment. Good. Just checking the time. One of the things what we did during the past month is that we introduced that this new structure of the GitHub repos or GitHub repositories. We used to have a one GitHub repository, which was the BNP, and a few additional ones like the BNP guidance and BNP provisioning schema. As part of the September release, we truly went live with these additional repositories. For example, the BNP sites core is actually the BNP core component. So all of the BNP core component code is actually located in this isolated repository. The BNP PowerShell has been relocated to its own isolated repository so that Erwin van Hoonen, who's the father and mother of the BNP PowerShell, can more easily then control and manage all of the changes which are coming in. And then we're also looking into isolating, or not, let's not say isolating, relocating Office add-ins and Office 365 API slash Azure AD samples to their specific repositories as well. And the key point of this one is that we didn't want to go to the model which some of the organizations in Microsoft are using, where every single sample is their own repository. Because the problem with that one is that then you, if there's people who want to get started on learning this new stuff and learning adding model stuff, they want to pull down multiple samples. They would have to start pulling down and forking and multiple different repos. Having a one repo with multiple samples and relevant samples for that particular topic will give you then a great starting point with multiple samples on that particular functionality. And that was really the kind of a thinking why we still kept a lot of the samples. Well, we still are in a model where we have multiple samples in one repo. So it's slightly more convenient from a GitHub tooling perspective, at least from our perspective. But we're absolutely willing to have a chat about this one in the Yammer discussion if you have alternative opinions and feedback around this one. Then there's three additional kind of a repos, which are kind of an interesting one. There's a BNP partner pack, which is something which we are just about to start, or it's already ongoing, which will be a partner. Well, it will be a more packaged solution, which will contain branding solution and site provisioning solutions, including sub-site provisioning and save site as a template capability using the remote provisioning engine. And what we want to do with that one is that we want to make sure that everybody or anybody can easily set up the patterns and practices samples with the Office 365 with Microsoft Azure and make sure that they have a starting point if they want to start building their own solutions on top of them, or they have a demonstration platform if they want to show how the patterns and practices guidance is actually working. So this will be an isolated set of code. It will be using the BNP NuGet package, but it's more packaged. There will be scripts which will automate the setup and which will help on getting started on using the patterns and practices guidance. This has been just started, and it will be released partly already in October release, and I think the final, well, it will be a V1 in the November release. Then there's the BNP transformation repo, where we are locating all the relevant guidance or samples around the transformation, which is more specific on the transformation itself. So we've been working with a lot of customers who need to move from full trust code to adding model, or have been moving from full trust code to adding model and app model. And we've actually built a lot of individual samples and guidance around that one and tools around that transformation. And the BNP transformation repo is for all of that material. You actually can find already a preliminary version of the guidance around InfoPath from that repository right now. Bert Jansen is, for example, leading that InfoPath work. So you probably want to go there if you're interested on the guidance on InfoPath transformation. And then the final new repo is the BNP ALM. This is something what I have a slide coming up on slightly later on the deck as well. But we really want to make sure that there's so many questions around the application lifecycle management in the adding model or using the app model or adding model using applications which are deployed in the Azure. And how do I actually do that movement between the dev, test, and production? And how do I, for example, do a web testing? How do I automate installations of an apps? How do I do metrics and so on? And that guidance, that repo is going to be then the location for all of that guidance. Now that these repos are out there, we really want to, for those who are actually actively contributing and making pull requests, so we would obviously we would still continue using the same model. There is the dev branch in a GitHub repo where all of the pull requests should be targeted. And then we go them through one by one, and every single monthly release will actually then switch over all of these repos to be released as part of the master merge. And that hopefully makes sense. As an example, the core component, which is getting a lot of submissions from the community, which is a great thing, we would ask you to, well, it doesn't, it's only located now in the BNP site core, so you would target all of the changes and pull requests to the BNP site core and dev branch, and then we'll process them through. And as a October master merge, all of those changes are then included in the official NuGet package. Still have plenty of time. So this is one of the slides what I wanted to add here, and this relates on the messaging around the 1 year of BNB. We started the patterns and practices officially August 2014. But when I was writing that blog post, I started thinking that I have this one slide actually from SharePoint 2010 MCM. And I really wanted to include this slide here for the sake of, how would I put it? Thinking how far we actually have got with this thinking. And obviously, it's not a unique thing to use the community. In Microsoft, we are growing and we're going to use the community more and more with the upcoming programs and solutions as well. But already back in the time when we had the master certification for SharePoint 2010, this is one of the slides which we discussed about with the attendees around the fact that what if we would have this native capability of remote provisioning sites and site collections using templates. So we would actually avoid the problems with custom site definitions. We would avoid the problems with custom web templates, which are causing some headache in some of the customers as well. And this is actually, like mentioned, this is around 2010. Now it's 2015. And personally, at least, I'm super, 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 super glad that we have gone this far, for example, with the BNP provisioning engine. And we're working with the community together, so we make sure that the guidance and the solutions and samples are actually based on real-life experiences. So it's not something theoretical, what people sitting in Redmond in the Microsoft offices are coming up with. It's actually real-life stuff. Based on customer experiences. And that's really, really interesting thing. Old slide, but it has a really, at least personally, it has a massive meaning because this was the first vision around the community project around site provisioning. And good comment from Ryan. Absolutely, especially in SharePoint 2010, it was a lack of those remote APIs. In 2013, the RTM version, we were not quite there. We've been adding those APIs, especially in SharePoint Online, and we're getting there gradually. So we know that there's gaps, we know that there's issues which we need to still tackle. But we can already right now provision sites and site collections remotely and apply branding, apply configurations. And for example, the BNP provisioning engine is an awesome example on all of the goodies what we can do with the remote APIs. So we've gone a wrong, long, long, long way from this initial thinking. Now, and I forgot to update the title, so that's my bad, absolutely. So this is September release, new samples. And these are the new samples as part of the September release. We didn't have a massive, well, it was an active month. There's five actual new samples coming in on the BNP guidance under the samples structure. One of the reasons why we don't have that many more is that the majority of the core team was concentrating on refactoring of the repositories. But there's a nice new sample related called core.knockout.js form, which is actually showing how to use the knockout.js and then building a custom form on top of that. And it's more around thinking that, okay, what if we wouldn't be using the InfoPath? What if we would be using the new age or JavaScript tooling to build those forms with what the end users are using? Then there's a nice sample around core.listViewThreshold. It shows an client-side or remote API way of implementing the content iterator. The content iterator is something what we have on the server side, where you are able to say for SharePoint that give me 500 items per request from a specific list, and then you process them one by one, or the in batches. And this is showing how you can do that with the client-side technologies. There's a nice sample on how to use how to file upload files using RESTful APIs. Then there's a nice sample from Maciej around the Outlook and the mail add-ins, which is then using the additional, let's say, connectivity on collecting related data for the particular user. And that's one of the demos with what we're going to show today after half past. I'm just double checking that Maciej is on the call. I should be seeing him, and no, I can't. Did somebody already update him as a presenter? It might be the case. Oh, he's on the call. Are you already a presenter? Yes, you are. Excellent. Somebody upgraded you. Good. And then there's the new sample, provisioning.microsurvey. And this is showing, how would I put it? It's showing an advanced version of an AppScript part, or add-in script part, whatever we want to call them at this point, from Bob Sherman. And Bob is going to do a demo on that one today as well. And Bob has been already upgraded as a presenter as well, most likely. Just double checking. And yes, he's there. Good. As part of the and I didn't update the slides, the title. So September release, core and engine updates. Obviously there has been provisioning engine updates. So there's improved and updated delta handling. So we are able to now extract, how would I put it? We're able to reapply templates on existing sites and modify those sites based on the differences comparing the templates. So you're able to actually do this life cycle of a site. You create a site based on a template, then you do a modifications on a template, and you're able to redeploy that template on top of the existing site. And that's the engine is able to tackle that, or able to recognize what are those changes, and then it's able to apply those changes on a live site. So it's not just about provisioning a new site. It's also about modifying the existing sites based on the business requirements. How did I start it from the PNP provisioning engine side? Let's go from there first. Overall quality and performance improvements. The PNP monitor scope implementation for engine operations. And we've introduced this PNP monitor scope, which can be used by you in your managed code as well, a way to track execution times. And if you have a look on the core component source code, you're able to see how that actually works. We're working on a sample for that, and that's going to be released as part of the October release. And I think it's coming from Anton, who should be, I think he was actually on the call as well. But what we can do with the PNP monitor scope is that if you're interested on understanding how long a specific
record your message at the tone. When you are finished, hang up or press pound.
Interesting. I didn't call anybody. Or should I? Should we leave a message? Anybody? Any good jokes? Hello, this is Vesa calling. Good. I think that's it. So the BNP monitor scope. If you're interested on understanding how long does a certain specific set of code actually takes. You're able to encapsulate that to the BNP monitor scope. So it's almost like the server-side monitor scope, the SP monitor scope. So you're able to actually get then counts and logging information around that. And it's a relatively neat and simple way of adding additional tracking within the code. And there's, again, additional improvements on the on-premises support, because we want to target the engine to both SharePoint Online and on-premises as well. So, but there, well, it's obviously we've been working more on the SharePoint Online side, and that's the reason why the on-premises support hasn't been really on the right level. On the core level, there's the BNP Morager scope and it's running through the introduction of a new token options for dynamic association, nested token parsing built. There's an automated build and test automation, which is actually being executed by a day-to-day basis. And we're actually running this unit tests within the with the core component automatically. And that's kind of relates on the ALM guidance, what I mentioned. We absolutely want to share all of these things, what we do for you and the people in the community, so you're able to take advantage of the scripts and the guidance, what we already have around the ALM topic. On PowerShell side, there's additional things as well. And then a additional note, sorry, Irvin, I'm not going to cover through all of those, but it's improving all the time. One of the nice things, though, about the PowerShell is that actually Irvin implemented a unit tests around the PowerShell commandlets as well. So you probably, if you're interested, you can absolutely go to the BNP PowerShell repo and have a look on how Irvin has implemented that. Some of the things, additional implementations around the engine, for example, workflow support, returnal setting support, language support, auditing setting support, and publishing setting support will be included in the October release. So there's already a I would say early version. Well, the schema has been locked and there's an early version of the engine already out there, but it's we are improving that all the time and the target is to get it live in the October release. And I'm running out of time again. I'm always doing that. This is the full list of people, external people who contributed on the September release. So we have Anil, we have few GitHub aliases because these people didn't actually have the right name on a GitHub, so we were unable to recognize them truly. Obviously, Irvin is there, Bob German is there, Ivan Yesodo is a GitHub alias, Matei is doing a demo today, like Bob. We have Lage, Mikael Svensson, Nigel Price, Omar TV, Paolo Pierosi, Pascal Berger, Radi Anatos, Rito Stadelman, Rodrigo Romano, Sergei Serkiev, Dr. Nguyen, Vincent Verbeek, and Victor Villain. And sorry for my pronunciation, it's Finglish, you can play me on that. So I cannot pronounce your names properly. Maybe Bob, that one I can probably do, or Irvin. But that's pretty much it. And obviously, not forgetting about the Microsoft team. So that was the external team. There's obviously a lot of people in the Microsoft side as well, who are involved in this BNP effort, and they're using their own time. A lot of these people are actually not that visible, even in the repository level. Bert Janssen, everybody knows Bert. Prior Michel is active on the site provisioning side. Then there's Dan, there's Frank, Jeremy Fake. Everybody knows who's Jeremy Fake. Kiki, Patrick, Ron, Sami, Steve, and me, and not forgetting Anton's as well. So a lot of these people, some of these people are actually working directly with customers using a separate isolated program, which is an internal program what we have in Microsoft, but they're feeding their learnings directly from that program to the BNP. And therefore, they're absolutely helping on the guidance and learnings around the engine as well. Roadmap, October release. I have 2 minutes. I have like two slides to go. We're still going to obviously continue working on the provisioning engine and the language settings, original settings, auditing setting, workflow settings will be included in the engine, including the exporting capabilities. So if you have a existing site which you have enabled language settings where you're able to export the template from an existing site and then use that for new sites as well. We're already working on official MSDN guidance around the provisioning engine, which is really, really cool. So there will be a significant effort around getting the provisioning engine documented in the MSDN as well. And then as part of the BNP partner pack, which is something what I've slightly mentioned already, we'll also include a sample or a solution how to do save site as a template using, however, this remote provisioning model. So you're not going to actually come up with an SDP files or WSP files since we're in SharePoint 2013, which have a downside because when you're creating a web template from an existing site, you actually create that web template on that moment of a time. Whatever improvements we as a Microsoft introduced to out-of-the-box team sites, that template doesn't have them. using the remote provisioning safe site as a template, you'll actually get all of those benefits. And there will be documentation and guidance around that. Additional sample solutions, the partner pack will be evolving, and we are going to finally start the ALM guidance. And that's the following slide, which I wanted to really, really quickly go through. So this is the initial thinking about the ALM guidance. What are we planning to cover in the ALM guidance? Obviously, the application or app or slash adding lifecycle process in general. So how can you move between the dev test and production environments? What is the difference between the SharePoint hosted and provider hosted? How do you do actually testing, and how do you build that testing environment in practice? Do you do isolated tenants in a SharePoint online, or do you do a single tenant and an isolated dev site collections? And what is the advantages of both options? The testing processes for add-ins is a really important thing. Telemetry is an interesting thing as well. So we really want to make sure that there's some information and guidance around the telemetry as well. So using, for example, the Azure Application Insights for collecting that telemetry when the solution is already running in the production. So you're able to then make decisions out of that information. Environmental differences in the Office 365 / on-premises are really important things, and the on-premises might actually, well, we will create additional guidance on on-premises side as well now that SharePoint 2016 is coming out. And obviously this will then contain actual scripts, code, and processes as a reusable assets, and they will be released under the BNP ALM repo. And I'll start a thread in the Yammer group for this one. So just making sure that we are collecting all of the information what you would like to have in the application lifecycle management guidance. And then we'll contact the right people in engineering, we contact the right people in other groups to make sure that we have the right guidance out there for you guys to take advantage. Did I miss any good questions? There's a lot of smileys, at least on the I'm window, and double checking quickly, did I miss any workflow? Workflow questions around the engineering. Paolo did answer that. Good. Okay, every single question seems to be already taken care of. Now, let's actually go to the demo side. And if there's any questions around what I presented in the first 30 minutes, just feel free to use time window. I'm going to look on that one. But let's give the stage first for Matej. Who's already presenter, and you're able to steal the presentation, and then 15 minutes or 20 at around 15 to hour, let's switch to Bob and have a look on this both of these demos.
Thanks. Hi guys, let's just jump into this mail add-in for Outlook. I'll just go in the GitHub repository on my local machine, which is here, samples, Outlook, edit data, and open it using Commander. The first thing that you'll need to do is basically install on all the dependencies, npm install, which is something that I've already done, so it doesn't make any sense. I'll just run the project, which is Node.js based, so it expects that you already have Node.js installed on your local machine. npm start, so you can see it runs on localhost 8443. Works, so it does. Yeah, let's look at it, how it looks like in Outlook web apps. I'll just show my flagged emails. So I'm showing you one that came from Microsoft.com. This is the mail add-in. They'll be showing you context. It's basically currently showing related emails to this current one. If we can expand it, we can see all the related emails for past time, ordered by date. We can even see the content, which is not currently very nice. Then we have related documents, which came from SharePoint Online. We can even check how this document library looks like, you know, on which metadata we basically filter. I think it's in documents. Yeah, we can see that here are the documents that are marked as Microsoft.com, so they should appear, and they do appear here. So there's a report. Sorry, I haven't run the other Visual Studio project that should show this data as well. I'll just run it. This is just a separate Visual Studio project that I've showed how can you can basically get additional data to this mail add-in. I'll reload the app. Yeah, and we have employees, which is as well a part of this Visual Studio project. You can see these are just dummy users that I've created when I was doing database. And there's the reports, again, the data for current company that we are looking at, Microsoft.com. Let's just check how we can change this in database that will basically, just to check if this really works. I'll change Sam Benson to be part of the Microsoft update database using entity framework code first approach. The database. Let's see if this really happened. Now there should be six people. I haven't run it, sorry. Okay, we're good to go. Yeah. You can see now there's six employees for this current company of this email that we're currently look at, and their reports as well. Yeah, the next part I will be showing you is just how to add this mail add into your Office 365 tenant. Basically, you have to go to portaloffice.com, go to admin exchange. Organization add-ins, and just need to select a file, manifest file from, I'll have to go from beginning source. Samples. And this is it. This one is basically what you want, which you have to select. The next thing I'll be showing you is just the Azure configuration, what you have to do on the Azure.
Yeah.
Manage Windows Azure.com, where you have your Azure Active Directory tenant. Okay. This one is mine. I'll go into Applications tab. I'll just show you already configured app that I already have for this sample. This one's it. When you're creating it, you just make sure that when you're in configuration tab that you copy client ID, you generate the keys, and make appropriate permissions for your app. And the next thing is just to make sure that in this, you'll have to download the manifest of this configuration and change some properties in it. I'll just show you which one. This is already well documented step, so I shouldn't really go through it. Allow implicit flow should be true, that you'll have to change, and then just redeploy it back and wait for 5 to 10 minutes to take an effect. Yeah, that's basically it. Maybe the one thing that I haven't mentioned I think I have a link right here. Yeah, it's how you can basically push this Node.js application in Azure, so it's hosted in Azure, not on your local machine. That's something that you would expect from a production perspective, if you're planning to push this in production. So these are the steps, which I won't go through. You'll just need to make sure that you use in server.js the content which is in server production.js. That's basically it. I think I've shown you all that I want. Hopefully someone will find this useful. You can add me on Twitter for additional samples that I'll probably add, and that's it. Thank you, Vesa.
Okay, so thanks for the opportunity to show off this sample. It's just been posted up, as Vesa said, to the PNP samples folder. And basically, this shows a whole bunch of different principles that are useful with the app script parts. And or sometimes I just call them widgets. These have been around for a long time. The idea is just that you've got some code that runs on a web page and really tries to take a minimum of dependency on the site in which it runs. So here we have a little microsurvey. That's the demo, and you can see here that it's I'm asking who's the favorite Office PNP celebrity. I'm sure we all have our favorites. I've been really happy with the PowerShell stuff, so I'm going to vote for Erwin. And you can see here the results come up immediately. Now, this is actually hosted as a SharePoint hosted app, and I can come in here. You can see I'm in a dev site if you look carefully. I can come in here and actually view the full page app. And so one of the things that's interesting about this is that this actually provisions its own content. So in the goal of being lightweight and also avoiding sort of the camel feature type of stuff, I did not provision the lists and columns and forms using the traditional method. Instead, I'm actually doing that using client-side JavaScript and RESTful calls mostly. There's one thing which is setting the custom forms that I had to use the CSOM, the JavaScript CSOM. So I'll show you that code a little bit later on. But you can see now I can come in here and actually edit the questions. If I want, I can go back and look at the result of an old question. I can also come in and edit the questions. So if I want to maybe make a new, kind of change this one, I could add somebody else to the list, what have you. So just wanted to sort of show off the custom forms capability. And notice that these are completely custom forms. I didn't modify the out-of-the-box forms, which has the advantage that if somebody changes out-of-the-box later, it's not going to break my code because I'm really standing on my own. So part of this sample is not only to show you how to do those things, but also show how something can be provisioned really in many different ways. And this is, I work for a partner, Blue Metal. We are a consulting company. We do a lot of projects. Code reuse is really important to us and our clients. We can save a lot of hours and money for our clients by reusing things. And so if I write a microsurvey, I might want to use it in different environments. SharePoint hosted app is a great one if you have a store and you want people to install things out of, say, the enterprise store, the office store. But sometimes maybe an end user, a power user, just wants to sort of drag a solution onto the screen. So let me go into Visual Studio and show you the project. It looks a lot like a normal SharePoint hosted app, but what's a little bit unusual is that inside of this one folder, the survey app folder, is my entire application. So I've got Angular here. This is the default page that you saw with, you know, where it allows me to edit the questions. Here are the different forms, and then this is a little web part. So watch what I can do. I can actually come in here and open this in File Explorer. And push that off to one side, and then I'll go to my browser, if I can find it. And here I have a brand new team site. Never did anything with this team site before. And I'm going to go into site contents and go into my site assets and create a new folder. Oops. And by convention here, I have to call it survey app, because I've got some paths that are coded to expect that. And now I'm going to just drag all these files right in there, just like that. And I probably don't need all these. There's a couple of them that are just sort of provided by Visual Studio housekeeping, but you get the idea. It's very simple. While I'm here, let me actually do one thing and take this web part file and just copy the URL to my clipboard. I'm going to need that in just a second. Now, if I just take this and I click on default, what's going to happen is that it's actually going to come up in this UI. It's now created all the content, and you'll notice that I took a sort of clue from the PowerShell folks who have this desired state configuration idea. So with desired state configuration, you don't create something, you just make sure it's there. And that way you can run the setup over and over again, and you won't get any errors. You'll just upgrade it to the current state. So this application is designed to be easy to upgrade. If I was to install it again, it would just add whatever new SharePoint content elements it needed. And in fact, if I refresh the page here, you'll see that it didn't try to create the questions list again. It said, oh, I found it. I don't need to do all that work again. So let me come in here and ask a quick question. What is your favorite color? Microsoft and Google have actually agreed on this. There are only four relevant colors in the palette, and there they are. And now there's my question. Maybe I want to put this on the homepage of my site. So I can come in and insert a web part. Every power user's favorite web part is this content editor web part. And I can just edit this. So this is the kind of deployment pattern that you would get if you had a power user, as I say, who wants to sort of deploy something. It's not something you would do in bulk. And if you had the app model set up, you would probably, or sorry, the add-in model set up, you'd probably use that. Now this is going to fail because I'd have to shut off a minimum download strategy on my site. Minimum download strategy makes it more efficient in some cases to render a page, but unfortunately it doesn't allow unregistered scripts to run. So my script is not registered, therefore I have to turn this off. So once I do that, there we go, and now I can come in here and start doing my survey. So that's the second way to deploy it. But you know, a lot of times you don't just have the power users, and maybe you want to deploy this out to hundreds or thousands of sites. So I've seen many customers who have project sites. They have a site for every project. Maybe they have a site for every customer or every product. I worked with a pharmaceutical company who had a site for every compound. I worked for a property management company. They had a site for every property that under management. So you get the idea. You've probably seen this pattern too. And it's really good if these sites can be uniform in nature so that you can find your way around every site. easily and train the users more easily. But a perennial problem is that they tend to get out of date. So wouldn't it be nice if we could deploy our customizations into these sites and manage the code centrally so that we can actually push it out to all of the sites? And this is something that wouldn't be so easy with the add-in model. It would certainly not work with the drag-and-drop model. So I put all my scripts up on a special site here, which is called Scripts, and I'm taking advantage here of the fact that my host name is the same for all of these because I'm sort of not following the best practice and using hostname site collections. The reason that they don't want you to use hostname site collections is because people can run scripts from the other sites and use scripts to access other sites, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. So I actually have in the PNP library, there's also guidance in how to install this, so it will work across different hostnames so that you could stand this up in an Azure site or an IIS site. By the way, everything here works in Office 365 in the cloud, or it works on-prem. I happen to be showing it on-prem. So anyway, this for now, the script site is here. Here's all my scripts, the same ones you saw me drag into the other site. And now again, I have a blank team site. So I'm going to come into PowerShell. And here's where I used Erwin's great PowerShell commands. And I have a few different PowerShell commands. Install microsurvey scripts actually installs the scripts that you saw. And now I'm going to go ahead and install the microsurvey. And it's going to prompt me for my credentials. Remember which VM I'm on. And that's what I was afraid of. So let's see. I spelled it wrong. Now this time for sure. Okay, great. So now, this script actually does all sorts of things for us, including it actually puts the web part on the page, but it also comes into site settings. And you'll notice here that it says manage microsurvey right here. So it actually added a site setting. So now I can come in here, or in the home page, doesn't matter, and ask my question. And is PNP cool? And make a new question, and the whole thing will work again. So let's just take a quick look at a little bit of the code to give you an idea of how this works. And then, of course, everything is up in the PNP library for your convenience. Oops. The first thing that I want to show is the way that it actually provisions the content. I have a couple of services here. The survey service knows about surveys. And so you'll see here that there's this huge chain of promises. It's going to go ahead and ensure that the lists and content are initialized. Then it's going to ensure there's a questions list, an answers list, ensure that the forms are set up, ensure the answers list is set up, etc. So it's just kind of going through all these promises here in Angular. And then if I go down to the SP data service, this one is designed to be reusable. So for instance, there's methods in here like ensure list. So all this does is ensure that there's a list with a certain name. That's all it does. So this can be reused, obviously, for other kinds of applications. Ensure there's a column on a list. One that you might find interesting is down here near the bottom. This is the one that actually adds the the one that actually adds the content type forms. So this adds a custom forms. You pass it the new display and edit form URL. And so again, you're making your own forms. These forms are written using AngularJS and RESTful services to update the content. And there's no way to do this in REST, so I had to use the JSON, and that's just fine. It was very easy to do, and you can come in and steal my code and do something fun with it. So basically, this also shows you how to implement promises between the two types of examples with REST or JSON. The final thing I wanted to show you is the deployment scripts. These make use of Erwin's scripting library, PowerShell library, which is just great stuff. And oops, wrong folder. And here's the script. And so you can see here that it's capturing the credentials. It's going to go ahead and make the folder, copy all of the files in there, shut off minimum download strategy, add the site settings link, add the web part to the page, and then it actually provisions the lists for me. You might have asked, well, what happens if, you might have asked yourself, what happens if the user is not an administrator and can't create those lists? So in the case of the drag and drop, I can assume that the person who did the dragging and dropping is probably an administrator. In the case of the SharePoint hosted app, the same thing is going to be true. I'm going to be probably having it be installed by an administrator the first time. But here I wanted to kind of be proactive and set up the lists in PowerShell so that if the first user who comes along is not an administrator, they're going to have this stuff already provisioned for them. Now, you might want to get smarter about your application. Don't invite it to capture a new question, for instance, unless you have an administrator. This is not intended as production quality. It's intended to show all the various patterns that I've demonstrated today. So that's basically it for the demo. I plan to write some blog articles on this. Oh, one thing I already did write a blog article about that you might find interesting is let's just take a quick look at how this is hosted. So here's that default.aspx page that brings up the settings. And what might be interesting about it is that this right here that I've highlighted is where the app runs. And so the entire thing is written in Angular. But I wanted to be conscious of the fact that if I'm in like a SharePoint hosted app or a provider hosted app, I kind of own the whole thing, and that's fine, and I have an iframe that I'm running inside of, so I'm kind of safe. But if I'm going to inject the script directly onto the page the way that you're seeing me do here, I need to kind of be a responsible citizen. And it sort of annoys me that when I see people assume that they're the only people in the world who are using a particular scripting library on the page. Now, in Angular, it turns out that ng-app is the normal way you would bootstrap your application, and you can only have one of those on a page. So as soon as I would add a second web part, this would fail. So I set out to invent a way to have the web to have Angular bootstrap itself safely on a page. And so basically the way this works is init UI is a script that looks for its parent, this div, and binds Angular to it, as well as loading up all of the dependent scripts. Actually, I'm working with a colleague of mine, Julie Turner, right now on an enhanced version of this, which will allow me to pass in the list of dependent scripts and has a number of other enhancements like parallel script loading, which will make it more efficient. But we'll still take this kind of defensive approach where we don't know what's on the page. Somebody may have put something in the master page. Someone may have put other web parts on the page that use the same libraries that I'm using. In this case, it will look to see if Angular's there. If it's there, it will use it. If it doesn't like the version, it will actually save away the old version, run the version we want, and then restore the old version so the other parts of the page can all work. So actually, up at bobwondergerman.com, I have an article on this init UI, and there's a lot more work coming in this area. So that's it for the demo. I hope this was helpful, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks very much.